Let's commence the press conference, please. Can the photographers finish doing their work? Yes, please, photographers. Okay, this press conference is going to be held in two parts. One first part, about 20 minutes, and we're going to have special 60th anniversary Donosti Award, Mr. Hoffman, Dustin Hoffman. He's going to answer upon his own career and trajectory, and then Billy Connolly, the actor of the film, and then that logically we can talk more about the film. So in any case, they are awaiting your questions. There is a question in the second row, very quickly please. Can you hear me, Mr. Hoffman?
Or dust phone, if you prefer. Congratulations for your movie, which I really loved, and congratulations for the award and for your whole career. But two questions for you. The first concerning Tootsie, because you once said that your mother was a kind of a role model to form that character of Dorothy, and I was always wondering which characterizations of your mother did you adopt for that role, and which characterizations did you personally inherit from your mother? And the second question is, you never considered an actor as purely a hired hand. Directors would say, well, Dustin, he would prefer to do it all by himself, from setting the light to cutting the movie. Are you glad that you could finally switch sides with Quartet? Because I really think you did a great job with that. Thank you.
Which question should I answer first? my mother was not the role model, but she used to call me Tootsie when I was very small, so the title was taken from her. I would say that there was a woman who I knew, an actress who was not physically attractive, who refused to stop trying to work. And I modeled it in a way after her, because when you're an actor, you try to think of a backstory for your character. And I thought that my character in Tootsie would never, men that she was attracted to would not be attracted to her. And therefore, I decided she would not compromise. She wouldn't marry just to marry. She would give her marriage to her work. It was a profound moment when I came home one day after makeup tests, and I said to my wife, I have to say that if I met myself at a party, I wouldn't talk to my because I was not attractive. And unfortunately, I based women on what they looked like in those days, and that was a big lesson for me. What was the other part of the question? Yes, it's a great pleasure to direct when you're directing either actors who know what they're doing or even non-actors who are in this film, musicians and opera singers, is when you find a way to have a relaxed set so they can just be spontaneous. It was the best, maybe the best experience I've ever had. Sorry, is that enough?
Sì, Mr. Hoffman.
Sir.
Yeah.
Can you hear me, Mr. Hoffman?
Sì.
Good. Okay, I'm going to ask you to make an effort here and go back 40 years back in time. Obviously, that's what it means to have such an extensive and rich career like yours. You're one of the few actors who can talk about your experience with a man like Sam Peckinpah, who has practically disappeared from the universe, so to speak. But could you tell us what it was, your experience with Straw Dogs with Mr. Sam Peckinpah? Can you talk about that?
Yes. Sam was an artist, and I'd like to think of him sitting right here. So whatever I'm saying about him, I would say if he was alive, so I'm not telling tales. He had a drinking problem, and it was the first film I ever worked on where they had to stop shooting because of his drinking, and we stopped for 2 weeks while they put him in a hospital, and he would have the alcohol snuck in there and he would drink. But I mention it because on the way back to Cornwall from London, where we were shooting, he was already drunk on the train. And he called me into his cabin, and I went in, and he had this idea. And he was very, you know, and he said, I think that when they rape your wife at that moment, we should cut to you shooting the gun. And I realized that the alcohol did not stop him at any time from being an artist. I really think he was a great artist. And I think, I guess arguably, film is what, 100 years old, and he was probably the first to... Oh, that's the... This is, I have to introduce you to my... This is Lucy Bevan, who's responsible for casting this movie, and she was pregnant with her child before this when we first started working together, and now she's had her second child. If all of us, when we were babies, could grow up and recall this moment, we would say it was very uncomfortable. It's very painful. But Sam, I think, was the first one to make an art form out of violence. I think he no one had done it before him. He found an aesthetic in violence in terms of the Wild Bunch. Is that enough? By the way, thank you for all being here, and thank you for those who, of you who saw the film. And that film really would not have been the same film without Lucy, because she went all over the country finding real retired opera singers and real retired musicians, people that are very much like the ones in the film, that they can still do what they do, but no one calls them. Like Ronnie Hughes, who is the trumpet player, he's 83 years old. He can still play, but no one calls him. Anyway, I thank Lucy forever for that.
Sí, bienvenido.
Hey, you're welcome.
Cinematográfica.
Sorry.
Yes. Okay, welcome and congratulations for you. And welcome, as I was saying, congratulations and to the San Sebastian Film Festival. Throughout your spectacular cinematographic career, what type of films do you identify yourself with, and what kind of role do you believe your personality is really portrayed?
I think it's mysterious. In a way, art is very mysterious, whether it's a story you read, or a novel, or a painting that you see, or a film, because you find yourself responsive many times, and you don't know why. I think I'm first responsive when I feel it's the truth, and sometimes it's the truth of a particular kind that I haven't lived with, but I still sense that it's the truth. We have this truth barometer in us many times, and we feel it touches something that we feel is a part of what this game of life is all about. So I think that's the first thing I respond to. I remember many, many, many years ago, I was just a student of acting. I was in my 20s, and they were just showing these European films for the first time in New York, and there was this director, Ingmar Bergman, and he made a film called Persona, and at one point there was a woman who was dying of cancer at the end of the movie, and her friend, big woman with big breasts, got into bed with her and cradled her. And there was so much of the movie I didn't understand, but at that moment I was gone. And I walked out of that movie and I said to my friends that I was with, I don't know really what that movie was about, but I know emotionally what it was about, but intellectually I couldn't tell you. So I think that's what I respond to. You just know sometimes, even though you haven't experienced, you just know that's the way it is. Persona, it's quite wonderful. I may take my jacket off, can I?
Yeah, of course.
Thank you. Sorry.
Hola.
I'm from the...
Adelante. Sí, hola, sí.
Hello.
Hola, hi. In some of your interviews, you've said that in the last few years, it's much more complicated for you to find roles that may interest you as an actor. I'd like to know to what extent this situation has determined that after almost 50 years in your career as an actor, you've decided to finally to debut, make your debut behind the cameras to direct your first film.
I have wanted to direct for many, 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 many years. As a matter of fact, when I first started to study acting, I would help actors that I knew with the scenes that they had for class, and they said, oh, you're a director, you should be a director. But I felt if I became a director, I would be giving up being an actor. I would be a failure as an actor. There is a film called Straight Time. In English, it's called Straight Time. And it's about an ex-convict, and I spent years working on that with the writer who was an ex-convict who had been in San Quentin. I spent years visiting San Quentin, getting to know convicts, and I was going to star in that and direct it and produce it and cast it, which I did, and cast the crew. I did everything. And then we started shooting, and they didn't have playback. So I got very confused whether it was a good take or a bad take. The cinematographer would say, well, it's a very good take, let's move on. And the editor was there and he said, no, go again. So I made a big mistake and I fired myself. And somehow that traumatized me for whatever reasons. And it's taken this long to finally direct. I think you might say that maybe, you know, there's every once in a while we hear about people who've been married 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times, and the 7th they find the right one. I think that's as far as directing, you know, finally found it after the 6 misses. Anyways, I don't know any other reason. As far as getting parts, when you get to be my age, I'm 75, is that the leading characters are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and if you carry a gun, then you can be older. I don't carry a gun, it's not my signature. And consequently, the characters that you're offered tend to be two-dimensional because there's not screen time to make you three-dimensional. And, you know, in a sense, I was spoiled because I was used to playing leads for many, many years. Is that enough, or you're not happy? Thank you.
Hola, buenos días.
Hello.
Hola, buenos días.
Hi, good morning. Congratulations for being here. The truth is, we're very excited, and it's like a crossroads, isn't it? All of a sudden, on the path, you get an award for your entire career, like the Special 60th Anniversary Donosti Award, and also your beginning as a director. That's a crossroad, which is a beautiful encounter. Could you talk about that? It's like a finale or an ending, but it's a beginning. And then I can't avoid the film. Talk about the film. The film, your film, you make a reference to the fact that the life of an artist never really finishes, does it?
I don't think so, but I don't think the life of a person finishes. Billy Connolly, who is you'll probably talk to next, who's in the film, once said, when I asked him when we were shooting, what do you think this film is about? And he said, I think it's don't die until you're dead. And I think that's what the film is about. And I think that it tries to take a point of view, which is that as your body depreciates, as you get stiffer, as you get in, you know, young people really don't know what that's like until it hits them, unless they're athletes, because many times athletes and dancers, you know, really can feel limitations in their body even when they're in their 30s because they've pounded it. They've hurt it so much. But there is the possibility of the spirit, of one's spirit widening, you know, in spite of what's happening to you. I do think of it personally as a little game with God. You know, don't be so sure that you're going to stop me this soon. You know, come on, give me your best shot. You know, because I'm going to keep going. I don't know how many of you have seen. It was on recently. It killed me. The Paralympics. Did you see the Olympics, but with people who didn't have arms or legs? I mean, to me, that was the same as the movie. You can't stop me. You cannot stop me from living. It was what the movie tried to portray. It's just being human. I think I'm the oldest one here. Being human is a very interesting experience because you are not one person. You're one person, let's say, in your pre-pubescent years. You're an entirely different. Sorry. You're an entirely different person in your teenage years, and then in your 20s, you're fighting and fighting and fighting to try to find your identity and find your direction in life. And then by the time you're in your 30s, you're starting to either get encouraged or depressed by your lack of, you know, continuation. And then, you know, in marriage and, you know, do you marry correctly? Do you know yourself? There's all these different people, I always think, that make up a life. And you look back and it's like a movie. It's like a movie you've seen many years ago. You say, oh, I really like that movie. You say, well, what did you like about it? Well, I remember this moment and that moment and that moment. I don't remember any other scenes, but I remember I loved the movie. And I think a life is like that. You remember this moment, that moment, this moment. So in a sense, you know, you're trying to understand as much as you can what this thing is all about, you know, that we call life. And I think it's underscored by the fact that it's a terrible time that we're living in now in so many ways. You know, here we are in San Sebastian, you know, at a film festival, which is quite wonderful. And just a few miles away in Madrid, there's strikes going on. And over 40% of kids under 25 are unemployed, cannot find work. And there's this disparity. You know, it's an extraordinary time right now. It's difficult to, you know, to try to feel that we will find our way out of this, you know. And I think the film tries to do that. We must. Sorry.
Muy buenos días.
Best everybody.
No, ha dicho usted una cosa muy interesante. Sí, perdón.
No, not at all. You haven't depressed us at all. You said something which is very interesting, is that every film, so you remember something of this film, apart from other values. I remember the garden, I remember what's green, the respect for nature. This is something that hits me right in the heart. But I wanted to talk to you about the film of those prestigious films of the 1980s, Cocoon by Ron Howard, and the extraterrestrials gave a bit of life to, or the capacity of transcendence. But in this film, and I'm asking you, I don't know, life is immortality, is the music, the art which is recorded, is that what remains? And this is a question. It's a question that emerges seeing the film, which I like very much, and I like the garden scenes very much as well.
It's something I'm just learning about. I wasn't sure what the question was. I'm sorry.
No, the question was that upon that film, Cocoon by Ron Howard, he took immortality with the extraterrestrials. Is art itself, the recordings, did that bring about immortality that goes beyond the artist? This is a question that occurs to me, having seen the film. But I am a gardener as well, by the way, just in case you wanted to know.
What do you garden best? Is it fruits and vegetables or flowers? Yes, we're temporary. We are all temporary. I did a play by Arthur Miller years and years and years ago, Death of a Salesman. And he said while we were working, he said that life to him was like a cake of ice. He says, we all want to be immortal. Every one of us would like to be immortal, so that even after we die, we are remembered. So immortality isn't just success, because, you know, as I can talk to my own kids, and I can mention, you know, great actors, they've never heard of them. They don't know who I'm talking about. Or I can mention great comedians that were in America in the 50s, Jackie Gleason, Sid Caesar, Red Skelton, you know, George Burns, and they look at me like this. You know, they don't have a clue. So that is gone. That doesn't remain. But there is a need for immortality. We want to be remembered, if for nothing else, by the people that we cared about and that care about us. I mean, the cynics will say we are here only to reproduce. That's the reason we're here, all species. And once we have reproduced, we are irrelevant. And I think that what Arthur Miller said, he said, you know, there is this need for immortality. And knowing that, we should also know, I love his image, that we have signed our name on a cake of ice on a hot July day, which is wonderful. You know, in other words, we do what we can, but it's all ultimately going. So it's quite wonderful when you see photographs of, you know, art that was done 10,000 years ago, 30,000, 40,000, and you say, my God, how did that artist know how to do that animal in such an extraordinary way, in such a detailed way, so gracefully? And there's been no way so far for art to be diminished. Art does remain, but I think that art isn't just specifically, it's not just pure painting, whatever. Art is in everything, is the possibility of giving love and nurturing growth. That's art, I think, and that's what I think we are really here for, rather than to just reproduce. To give, to nurture.
Let's see.
Don't stop gardening.
Let's invite Billy Connolly to join us.
Yes, yeah? Please.
Okay. Y seguimos la rueda de prensa, por supuesto.
We'll follow the press conference, obviously. Billy Connolly is going to come in to the press conference.
Bien, adelante. Había una pregunta por ahí.
As I was saying, there's a question on the right there. Please stand up and ask your question. Next question, please. Next question. I'm an old man as well. Can you tell Mr. Hoffman to put his headphones on? And I'm not having any problems at the present moment. I'm an old man, as I was saying. I don't have any problems getting up. And I want to ask a very brief question, because sometimes they ask people, what's the question? I'm going to be very succinct. Music and old age seems, it's a great mix for success, but do you believe that your film can be successful for young kids, for youth? Because obviously it's quite clear that sometimes kids are on one side and we old people are on the other side. Thank you very much. You think it'd be successful for youth, for younger people? Well, whatever the two of you want to answer, or both of you, I imagine. Okay, whatever.
I think it has every chance of being a success, because good is good and funny is funny. It doesn't matter whether you're young or old. It is a... Yes. Yeah, I don't think it's particularly important age. All old people say this. But I think age is terribly overrated. Oh God, I've mixed myself up. I don't see why music by old people or romance among old people shouldn't be enjoyed by young people, or the opposite. Oh God, I'm so boring. I think it's a great movie and I think I'm great in it. And I'm just waiting for my award. Nobody is pointless about it. I wish I knew how to put this thing in my ear.
Put it over the top. Oh, wait, wait. Is that it? Better?
Yes.
That's directing.
No, that's old.
In terms of what you said about music, I mean, the idea is, we all know it, is that the new kids on the block, so to speak, have to dismiss and erase what you love. In other words, it's a primitive thing. They have to, in order for them to grow, they have to say you are old-fashioned. They have to find a new dimension, if you will. That's in the movie, he says the Beatles are not here to stay. Yes, they are. And when rap came in, I told my own kids that's just a fad. Well, the fad has lasted now almost 40 years now. So there is a need to do that. And ultimately, you only can do a certain amount, and then stuff goes back, whether it's clothing or whatever, it goes back to where it began. There's only so many different types. What's interesting to me is that when you asked Billy about music, is that this so-called classical music is you know, what, 200-300 years old? That's all. Before that, it was, what, ecclesiastical music? It had to be religious music and film. I mean, here we are celebrating film, and it's not even 100. I'm older than sound. Just almost. I think sound film came.
I'm older than sound.
Almost. Sound came in 1930. I was born.
I'm older than light.
But we are. This is. We think we're the modern.
I'm older than some colors.
Which ones?
Blue and green. I'm younger than yellow.
That's why I love it.
I don't think I've never said anything so stupid in my life.
We all think we're modern. Everyone who lives at the moment on this planet thinks that they are the modern. You know, every era has felt that in history. So we are now the modern. But 50 years from now, 100 years from now, people will be saying, my God, they were having all these film festivals and the art form was not even 100 years old. It was in its infancy. That's the exciting thing for us, is that a place like San Sebastian celebrates and embraces it. As I understand, it's really for the people of San Sebastian. It's not to sell the movie, you know, like Cannes or whatever. It's you know, they're embracing a very new art form.
Hello. I want to ask Dustin and Billy, but Dustin especially.
Oh, just forget me, you said.
No.
No, you said Dustin first, so just count me out.
Well,
there's one way to get me in, put me first.
Go ahead and ask me, don't listen to him.
Okay, you...
Ask him anyhow.
Go ahead.
You've made a...
There's another thing.
Go ahead.
You made a quintessentially English film, I would say, BBC-backed. And I wondered, first of all, what attracted you to it and how you came to it. And secondly, going back in time to Midnight Cowboy, made by an Englishman, a quintessentially New York film. If you could talk a little bit about making that and making those connections.
Sure.
And also how important Billy is in your life.
What do you think, Billy? Do you want to answer this?
You answer it first.
Okay. John Schlesinger directed Midnight Cowboy, and the movie got mixed reviews. No one ever remembers those things unless they've been in it, yes. And in fact, we had previews of the film before it opened, and people would stand up and walk out in blocks because they thought it was just too, you know, X-rated. In fact, it's the only film that ever won an Academy Award with an X. Then after it won an Academy Award, they changed it to an R. But John Schlesinger was criticized a great deal because they said he's British. He's satirizing, or he's characterizing New York. It's not like that. He took a beating for it in many ways. And yet he just recorded what he observed. He came to New York. He saw a man lying, sleeping on the pavement in front of Tiffany's, and people just walked by him, and he put it in the movie, and reviewers said, oh, that would never happen, you know. For me, I just found a script that spoke to me. It didn't matter that it was British. It was about performing, which, you know, I spent a lifetime trying to understand. And it was about, you know, this film was no different than films about dancers, as I said, or athletes, and that is that you have this extraordinary gift and then it's gone. I mean, it's not as bad for opera singers as it is for athletes. I mean, they have, what, 5-10 years or whatever, and then it's gone. And I think it was about that. But Billy, please.
Well, I thought Dustin fitted very well in the English situation. Because the art linked him to everybody there. And it used to be wonderful every day watching him being angry at aeroplanes. Because the Queen lives down the road from where we were filming. And when she's at home, they redirect the aeroplanes. Yeah, and they directed them over where we were filming. So we'd be talking away, nice, quiet conversation. Dustin go, what the?
Every 30 seconds.
That linked him to everything British.
As far as how I got the film, I made a film with John de Borman, the cinematographer who did this film, and he was the cinematographer for a film I did called Last Chance Harvey with Emma Thompson, and we became friends. And this is a little over 3 years ago, and I said to him when I was leaving London, I was done with the film, Happy New Year. I said, by the way, if you find a script, I would love to direct something with you as the cinematographer. And he said he hung up the phone. And 5 minutes afterwards, if you believe in serendipity, como se dice en español, serendipity, you know, chance. He hung up the phone, and 5 minutes later, Finola Dwyer calls him. And because she was the producer on Education, which John had also done. And she said she had a script and she wanted to know his opinion and did he have any suggestions for directors. And he told her immediately that I had just talked. He sent me the script. I was responsive to it. I read an early draft, but nevertheless, it got me. I read it on the airplane. And my wife was sitting next to me as I was going back to Los Angeles. I started to cry, and she said, why are you crying? I said, I think you have to read it. There's something there. And I had John try to put in a good word for me to Finola Dwyer, and she's here in the first row. Finola. and Finola's answer when I said I wanted to direct it, she said, let me think about it. Anyways, it just happened by chance. Sometimes just happened. And Billy was a gift. Billy was just a gift from God to be in this. Billy did something in this film, what the actors did, for those of you that like it, because I always think I'm talking to people who hated the movie. So, you know, I'm not talking to you because I can't change your mind. But for those who liked it, each actor brought dimensions that were not in the part, which is always what you want when you're making a film. You want to think of the script as a blueprint that the actors then enlarge. And one of the things that Billy brought to it was his concern and his protection and his love for Sissy, for the Pauline Collins part. That was not in the script, and that was his, you know, he was simply in the script, someone who flirted with her, but he did the other thing which was much more powerful, and that was he was her friend and protector.
Well, in fact, following your answer, why don't you direct this movie before? Why now? Why not before? Aren't you ready, or something was missing?
I think sometimes you're ready and you don't allow yourself to do something that you're ready for. And it's called, I don't know how you say it in Spanish, we call it your demons. Your demons stop you. You stop yourself more than anything else. Why does it take you so long to do what you could have done years ago? So it's something I don't really understand. But I'm glad I overcame one demon. I've got a few others that are still getting the best of me.
Hola, buenas.
Hi. Hi, we can see perfectly that you guys get along pretty well. We're having a great laugh.
Ah, vale, vale. No, quería saber.
No, I'd like to know whether on the shoot everything went really well. I had a fantastic time, because I'm under the impression that everything went, it was a lot of fun, it was a lot of entertainment. And Dustin Hoffman, I'd like to ask you, if you look back in your career, how do you see you've evolved in your career?
What I tried to do directorially in the movie is something I've always felt in almost 50 years of making films. I think that is to avoid the constant mistakes that certain directors have made that I've worked with, and that is that when an actor is on the set, the actor is always right. If he cannot make the scene work, it's not the scene's fault. I mean, it's not the actor's fault. It's the scene has to be readjusted. And many times the director forces the actor to bend, to turn, and you can feel it, that the actor, because if the actor is a decent actor, then he has his own organic truth. And the scene has to be somehow altered for the actor to be comfortable. And all I wanted to do was that each actor felt comfortable, that we got to the point where it was comfortable. Because I, for myself, I always feel that I do good work when it's effortless. But it takes a lot of effort to get to the point where it's effortless. That's mainly what I tried to do. With Billy, you go ahead, take your best shot at me.
Well, I like being directed by actors because they know how it feels to be dangling out there without a friend in the world when it's not working. An actor, director can spot that and stop it. Whereas a writer, director seems to, well, in a lot of cases, put a lot of faith in his punctuation, and every comma must be in its place and things must be said that, and you don't get a chance to personally expand. There's a romance in actors that I love. I remember when the four of us, the quartet, we had to go to a singing lesson with a teacher in London, and Dustin showed up, and it was the first time he had heard us singing the quartet from Rigoletto, and he cried, and I thought it was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen. He didn't let us sing it in the movie, but it was a beautiful thing to see him being moved by our singing.
They were actors. They weren't opera singers. But when they did it, the essence, the art of it came through. And the only reason we didn't put it in the movie is the characters are supposed to be opera singers, and no one wants to see Pavarotti coming out of his mouth, you know, dubbed. So we knew what, no other way to do it. But when they rehearsed it, and they caught the essence of it, and that was, it was very moving.
Congratulations for the movie. I truly enjoyed it. So congratulations to both of you.
Where are you?
Okay.
Oh, hi.
It's a question for both of you, so I would like leave it up to you who starts first. You sort of answered the question. I was really intrigued by the artists who, on one hand, are used to perform, but in a different way, opera and music. So how was the experience? So did they really get used to perform in the film as actors? And at the same time, the age, so was it difficult or easy to, for them to memorize, and did they really have a different approach to normal actors somehow? And
the first thing that I did with Lucy, after I read the script, I told Fanola, I said, I cannot direct this if I have to hire actors to pretend like they're opera singers, except for the leads, the four leads. I'm not excited about hiring actors that pretend to play instruments. I would like to get real musicians, real opera singers. And the first thing Fanola said, well, you know, we have to find out what the union problems are, and they're all in their 70s, 80s, 90s. And once we got the clearance and Fanola said, you can do it, then Lucy Bevan literally scoured the earth, at least, you know, the British Isles, to find these people. It was, and I think Billy can talk, but there was nothing that we have ever experienced. You don't know when a movie is going to work or if it's going to work, and I still don't know if it's going to work. It didn't open yet, you know. This may all be a way for God to set us up before he gives us a knockout punch. But these people had been extraordinary. That's why they're at the end. I mean, they had played La Scala. They had been in their prime, and now if you passed them on the street, you wouldn't look at them. And everyone on that screen are the real thing, and they're in their 70s, their 80s, their 90s. That one woman that we're saying happy birthday to, Olivia, she admitted to being 87. You know, but we knew she was older than that. It was an extraordinary experience that they took the job. They said their phones hadn't rung in years. That's an interesting question. Why the culture stops calling people who can still perform, who can still do it. Maybe not on that level, but still, there must be a place for
well, they were still brilliant.
Extraordinary.
The trumpeter in particular was outstanding.
And they come to work every day at 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock, and it's low budget film, so they work late till 6 at night, day after day after day after day, with such energy and passion. It was the best part of the whole shoot for us. They had a job.
And they didn't take it too seriously. There's a part in it where I am arguing with the conductor about the speed everything's going, and we're doing bits of singing. But afterwards I have a laugh with the woman in the wheelchair, where she sort of tries to imitate me. Well, she did that completely on her own. So she was ad-libbing. And it was an absolute, that's why I grabbed her at the end. None of that was rehearsed. It was an absolute joy to see her having a good time, because she actually was in the wheelchair.
When Lucy was sent me the tapes of these people, she sent me the tape of this woman, and when she auditioned, because she was a former opera singer, she forgot the words. And I said to Lucy, we have to keep that in the movie. So when we asked her to sing it, we asked her at the last minute, and that's why at some point she said pajamas or something like that. She organically forgot the words, but whatever happens with the film, my God, if you can enjoy the process, which I always think women have over us men, they know what process is, and we are more concerned, unfortunately, with result, you know, winning, you know. but just the process, the doing it, the making it, was the gift that we all got from this. If that makes any sense.
For reasons of agenda, unfortunately, invited guests, we've got to finish here. Thank you very much to all of you. Wait up.
Billy wants to do 5 minutes of stand-up.